And there's a lot of concern and change in the higher ed landscape right now, focused on apprenticeships and internships, more applied approaches to learning, more hands-on, more problem solving. And I think that's really where we need to be shifting our focus. And there's a kind of unspoken conversation, if you will, about internships relative to should they be paid? And I think this is where I like to put my stake in the ground.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Garner. Hi, Brad.
Hi, Tiffany.
We've already smiled so much in part one of this series with Whitney Kilgore. Welcome back to the podcast, Whitney.
Thanks for having me, Tiffany.
She's an all-time favorite. She's back, and it's time for us to continue with part two.
Tell us about the exciting new partnership between iDesign and Engagely.
Oh, so Engagely, I don't know if you guys have taken a look at it yet, but Engagely is the hot new ed tech tool. And in the middle of everybody being concerned about their university being labeled Zoom U, and could parents asking, you know, what's the value of a higher ed degree when it's all online and it's all Zoom all day long, right? There's all this concern over what is high quality online learning, which, gosh, we can spend a lot of time talking about that in the next couple of questions. But Engagely came on the scene. I think I saw it in October of last year. And the way they flipped the script, so to speak, and have tables as where students come in the door, you choose a table to sit at. And it's very learner-centric. It's very student self-organizing. It allows for communication to flow in a way that's just really unique and different. So you can still have a conversation around a table while the teacher is talking. You could bump the person next to you, so to speak, digitally, and say, what did he just say? Or what did she just say? And the person that's at the front of the room can continue talking. People can go up to the front of the room and they can share a story or what they're learning or have a, you know, moment to give a presentation. So it is truly an active learning platform. And I think it's the classroom of the future. We've been using tools designed for business to do the job in education for way too long. And this one's designed by educators for educators. And so it just makes sense. It clicks, right? And I liked it so much that I introduced my husband to the folks at Engagely, and he now works there too. He's been in ed tech for a while.
Oh, wow. That's
the backstory, I guess, is that there's a Kilgore connection there. But Dan Avita, who's the creator of Engagely, along with Serge and Daphne Kohler, were the co-founders of Coursera as well. So they've got a background in doing some pretty interesting things in higher education and being incredibly successful. So my CEO, Paxton Ryder, and Dan put heads together and thought about how can we do something that's really compelling for the education space. We have the power of a wonderful, amazing, thoughtful champion team of instructional designers, right? So we have all this human capital that could help faculty make use of any ed tech tool. We work on all ed tech ecosystems. But imagine if you're new to Engagely and you need support. So it's a little bit like peanut butter meets chocolate, right? The whole Reese cup moment. Mm-hmm. But Engagely is this robust ed tech tool that some individuals may need support to use. So between iDesign and Engagely, we can take Engagely to our partners. Engagely can have support, or the Engagely partners can have support from iDesign. And it's just everybody's better off that way.
Yeah. I have a terrible confession to make. As I've been listening to Whitney, I've been Googling things and then bookmarking them so I won't forget about the Eisenhower matrix and Engagely and all those other things. So just keep talking. You're getting some great ideas.
Awesome, Brad. Thanks.
We have two related but different questions coming up. I'm excited about. I feel like this really opens the door for you to take the conversation however you like. I know, you know, you get invited to speak on specific topics, but again, this is open for you. What is one subject in higher education that people should be talking about more?
So I think we talk a lot in higher education.
Good answer.
I this is going to feed right into your next question, I'm sure, but I think we got to do more doing. I do a lot of talking in groups with people who want to do something, and the call to action is a little slow. And I guess that's maybe why I work outside of a higher education system with multiple partners, because then I can feel that energy, that spark of enthusiasm around new projects and have a greater impact, right, on student experiences, because I'm able to work across so many different institution types and institutions and student types. But I think the time for talk is kind of over and it's time to do stuff, right?
Okay, so what is one subject in higher ed that people are talking about? And if we do, again, we do a lot of talking, but not acting on enough.
So I think there's a gap between theory and practice that we could take some time to close. And if we focus our energy there, that could be a real positive. Brad, you mentioned earlier the world of work and the length of a career and the shift to lifelong learning. As we start thinking about what the future holds, if we spend an inordinate amount of time theorizing, then we don't get to that action piece, right? And there's a lot of concern and change in the higher ed landscape right now, focused on apprenticeships and internships, more applied approaches to learning, more hands-on, more problem solving. And I think that's really where we need to be shifting our focus. And there's a kind of unspoken conversation, if you will, about internships relative to should they be paid? And I think this is where I like to put my stake in the ground, is as someone who came up through the College of Education, who had to go and do student teaching in a classroom where someone else was the paid teacher and have to work for that semester, 40 hours a week, mind you, for $0 in order to get to graduate and then go get a job making almost $0, let's be honest, right? And we just don't pay our teachers enough. I think that asking people to do that work without any sort of compensation and asking them to pay tuition while they're doing that is actually a really difficult spot for a lot of individuals. I know at the time I went through student teaching, I had a two-year-old. That was really hard to pay tuition, to pay daycare, right? Pay somebody to take care of my kids so I could go take care of somebody else's 20 children, right? And then to have the teacher sit in the corner and, you know, whatever it was that he or she did in the corner while I was taking over the classroom, right? So I know there's a lot of internships out there. There are a lot of organizations that are doing good work around apprenticeships and applied opportunities for individuals. There are companies out there that are doing really interesting things, tacking on the applied piece on the tail of a degree. So you've probably heard a lot about boot camps and things of that nature. There's a company called Skillstorm out of Jacksonville, Florida, and they find partnerships with universities. And then let's say you're graduating with a four-year degree in English, a bachelor's in English or psychology or philosophy, but you're not sure what you want to be when you grow up and you have some tech skills. This company, Skillstorm, will actually train you in coding or Pega or Salesforce and place you in a job where you earn a decent living while you're also getting that training and support for a couple of years. And it's a bit of a kind of staffing meets professional learning, just meets mentorship and support that's missing, I think, on a lot of our career journeys. So I bet there'll be more work in that kind of middle space in between higher ed and the world of work. I'd like to see more of it there.
So I wonder if the recent rulings around college football players, for example, being able to gain benefits from their skills and their experiences in college football, I wonder if that will spread to other similar types of ventures that college students do, like student teaching, like internships.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That would make sense. And I think we're headed in the right direction. Doesn't it just all start with football too?
It does. Starts and ends right there. Boom.
I feel like you need to insert your fight song here.
Yeah. We have been really enjoying asking our guests to make predictions about the future of higher education. And you have shared some predictions, but is there a certain prediction that you have that you'd like to share about the future of higher ed?
Sure. Who wouldn't love to be wrong looking back in 5 years?
You know? The good news is, yeah, we could edit it out later. If you're that wrong, you could, you know, send us a little note. Actually, Mike Jones.
Oh, I'd be more than happy to be wrong. I've been wrong before. It doesn't hurt my feelings any.
Before you start, let me just give you a little warning. In about 3 months, we're going to do another show called Can You Believe She Said That?
Oh my goodness, so, Brad.
Nice.
Go ahead. Go ahead and share with it what you want to
terrible.
Say.
Wow, now I'm terrified. I think we're going to see interesting competition. As we were talking about last question, there's this middle space that's starting to emerge, right? So we're going to have businesses that are trying to close the gap of application of practice. We have the new Amazon University that's standing up. We have players like Guild and InStride that are doing tuition as a benefit for employed individuals at really large companies. We've got the boot camp providers and the interesting acquisition by Southern New Hampshire of Kenzie, I think it was, a boot camp provider. So there's a lot of change that's happening in higher education. And I kind of feel like there were a lot of people that said, oh, Clayton Christensen was wrong. It turns out we just needed a pandemic to make some of his predictions come true, right? But there is this interesting thing that happens when you have a force that exerts pressure on an existing system. And what you can get is you can get things that crumble. You can get beautiful innovations that emerge. And then, you know, everything in the middle. And what I hope to see is all the beautiful innovations that emerge without any crumbling. But I'm afraid in order to make an omelet, you have to break a few eggs. Mm-hmm. So we may end up with a number of closures over the years to come. We've already seen in the wake of the pandemic, a few of those. So there'll probably be more of that. And then there's going to be this unique opportunity for beautiful innovation. And what that means will vary based on institution type, the learner they serve, their commitment to equity and making sure that marginalized students are no longer marginalized and we're not having this conversation. In 5 or 10 years, students are students and we're able to just teach everyone effectively and move forward. But the forces that are acting on our systems right now, whether it's from a race or political perspective or what's happened with the economy because of the pandemic. There are just so many acting forces pressuring our systems. Things are definitely changing. Mm-hmm. And I hope for my children and their children that where we end up in years to come is in a much more friendly, cohesive, can't we just all get along kind of space, which is probably a bit of a Pollyanna answer for you. But I didn't get into education to be divisive or dismissive. I got into it because I care about students and I want them to have a better future. So that's I guess, a bit of a dodge and a Pollyanna answer.
No, it's good.
So do you anticipate, again, in the Pollyanna theme, in the future, perhaps, institutions who may be very different and have different sets of strengths coming together and capitalizing on one another, sharing their resources.
Yeah. So it's interesting. The phrasing, Brad, that you used, capitalizing on each other and then sharing resources. And I'm not sure that those two things coexist really well. We do see in the market today a few consortia type approaches coming onto the scene, right? We knew Unison's been around for a while now. Acadium is, you know, pulling together people from different institutions. It will be interesting to see if that can continue. I think you get more sharing in the K-12 sector than you do in higher ed. Higher ed has, over the years that I've been a part of it, been protective of their brand and their identity. And so there's less sharing, but that's also tied to their funding models, if you think about it, right? So K-12 is very open and sharing because they also share resources. So there's kind of, I guess, a parallel, if you will, between that and the actual give and take back and forth from institutions or, you know, schools. Suffice to say that I think that the sharing could be a good thing, but as one institution gives a course or teaches a course for another institution, there needs to be a funding mechanism that supports that, right? So much like in K-12, there's some sharing. In higher ed, if we don't figure out the way to share those financial resources so that we can take care of the faculty and the administration that goes into running those courses, then it probably won't work. I think there's some good models to start with, though.
Good.
So with the pandemic and all the challenges that instructional designers face anyway, what does quality look like now?
It's a great question. So one of the things that we talked about earlier was this instructional designer burnout, compassion fatigue, article series and workshop series that Patrice and I have been doing. And we met with a very large university system and had a conversation about these things, burnout. Afterward, they invited us to stay as the instructional designers were talking about their biggest concerns and what the road ahead looked like. And the number one thing I heard was, now that faculty can push go on a Zoom call, some of them are thinking, that's it. That's online. That's how we do this. Mm-hmm. And so they were struggling with, how do you unlearn or untrain and retrain new people to the online learning space, all the other components of online learning, right? So it isn't just synchronous. And how do we get there? And so that's the big challenge that lies ahead, I think, for most of us that work in this space. There's a great video of a gentleman who has reversed the handlebars on a bicycle. Have you seen this?
No.
And it's how to unlearn riding a bike. And when you reverse the handlebars, you also reverse the wheel. And so when you turn right, it's actually turning left. And when you turn left, it's actually turning right. And it took him about 8 months to relearn how to ride that bicycle once the handlebars were flipped, because it's so ingrained in your memory of how to do it the way that you learned how to do it, right? So if we teach the way we've been taught and we grab onto Zoom as our first foray into online learning, will we get to a point? How long will it take before we get to a point where the asynchronous components that can be the backbone to support that synchronous can actually be built out, right? So the challenge that lies ahead is unpacking and unlearning, as Yoda would say, right? You must unlearn what you have learned. And get to a place where we can start thinking about what does quality mean. And I think it's also, you know, the old pendulum swing. When we first started building online programs, oh my goodness, a long time ago, the focus was on completely asynchronous components. And rightfully so, back when the web was new, we couldn't do a whole lot with synchronous things. I remember some of the first online courses that I designed, we actually had conference calls instead of instead of like web meetings, right?
Walkie talkies.
Yeah. Well, we weren't quite
I know.
I do remember having a Nextel phone that had that feature way back in the day, but but yeah, so here we are in this world where we've gone from asynchronous being the primary way that we would deliver online learning to now synchronous being the primary modality for online learning.
Amen. We so agree with you.
And I think the pendulum needs to just settle down. And what we'll get to is this beautiful blend, right, of asynchronous, totally structured, but structured flexibility for the faculty, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that what they bring to that synchronous moment is this wonderful cohesive glue and value and trauma-informed pedagogy to help faculty students to really sink into the content and better understand what they're there to learn, but have these active student engagement opportunities where they can talk to each other. They can just go deep, right? And until we get to a place where that's balanced, I think the pendulum is still just kind of swinging, right? It's emergency mode. It's quality online learning, right? Yeah. And we just all need to settle down and just blend it.
Yeah.
Very good.
I hope we settle down soon. I hope it's not emergency too much longer. We're learning.
Yeah. In some of the interviews that we did for that, the paper and the research that Patrice and I have done, we actually heard from instructional designers who were really worried because faculty would say, oh, I need this so urgently in this moment, but don't worry, I won't need it next semester because we're going back face to face. And I think one of the big takeaways of why instructional designers were feeling so emotionally drained was because they felt like all of this work that they've been pouring into the situation is all for nothing. Mm. It's all temporary. And so I think there are a lot of lessons we can learn from the pandemic to carry forward into how we continue to be creative and innovative and deliver online learning in really thoughtful ways. Blended thoughtful ways.
Yeah. Thank you for advocating for instructional designers and faculty everywhere and slowing down and being a voice for them on the show.
Perfect. Thanks, Tiffany.
One of the things that I'm really excited about is you mentioned earlier in the show that you would share some of the resources that you've put together for instructional designers, considering all that they've been through pre-pandemic and then in the pandemic. Those are things that we would like to link to on our website, www.digitaltolearn.com with numerical two. And hopefully they're also interesting and helpful for our faculty listeners as well, who are navigating similar challenges and burdens from just the increased pressure and change of the pandemic. So thank you for doing that meaningful work. And thank you for being here with us today.
Thanks for having me, Tiffany. Good to see you and Brad again.
Good to see you too. Thanks.
For all of our listeners, we will be back next week with a new episode of Digital to Learn, but don't miss our resources on the website. See you next time.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Embrace the future.
Always keep learning.